Welcome to Out in the Bay, queer radio from San Francisco. I'm Eric Jansen. As we enter our 10th month of COVID restrictions here in California and the U.S., it's abundantly clear that the holiday season, like so much else this year, won't be normal. What will our COVID Hanukkah, COVID Kwanzaa, or COVID Christmas look like? How might we find joy and peace without the parties, public events, and general fa-la-la, fa-da-rol that have been our traditions? Here to help us, perhaps inspire us on how to live through and with luck even enjoy this year's stay-at-home holidays is Jim Provenzano. He's the arts and nightlife editor for the Bay Area Reporter, Northern California's largest circulation and oldest LGBTQ newspaper and online news service, and an 8-time novelist. Jim's most recent novel, Finding Tulsa, was published in September. In this half hour, we'll preview some upcoming events of note, mostly online, and Jim will also tell us about some books that could make good gifts for friends or for yourself while you snuggle in place this winter. Jim Provenzano, thanks for being here and welcome to Out in the Bay.
Thank you for having me, Eric.
Before we start discussing specific events, can you give us some general thoughts and observations about how entertainment and cultural events and institutions are how they're doing and how have they had to change to survive?
Yeah, well, mostly from work, I get about 75 emails a day and I sort them of stuff that is either well-prepared or kind of thrown together. Sometimes I want to help something that's kind of thrown together. If it's LGBTQ, they get front of the line because that's what our paper focuses on. But a lot of people jumped to adapt. Other people kind of took a break and closed completely and then came back, revived. Theater companies are doing radio plays. Authors are doing Zoom chats and able to find and chat with fans around the world instead of depending on whoever showed up at the bookstore. Musicians are throwing stuff out left and right. It's been amazing, including the Broadway actors have been doing benefits. So a lot of people are adapting really quickly. And the one thing I'm noticing is that just people are able to put something together within a few days versus a few months. So that's been fascinating to watch and observe and try to report on, to share quickly with people who are depending on online information as well as in our print paper, to just find out what to do, stuff to do.
What changes do you think have been the most successful?
I think the radio versions of theater plays that people are adapting. American Conservatory Theater is adapting their huge story with music of the Charles Dickens' A Christmas Carol, which is their annual fundraiser. It's like for ballet companies, their Nutcracker. It really sells out, a lot of family entertainment, and they've reconverted the story into a radio play with multiple characters, which I think anyone who listens or remembers listening to old-timey radio shows or anything, that should be very entertaining to see how they've done it. Other theater companies are doing that as well. They're videotaping their shows. They're doing remote readings, table readings, which is not visually interesting, but if you learn how, I think we're adapting as audiences to adapt to what people are doing in terms of chats, in terms of online entertainment. But I think a lot of others are adapting to that even too. They're trying to make things more visually interesting by, doing Zoom chats in various locations. One of my favorites is Amy Seiwert, the choreographer. Her company had a dance film festival. So we got to see dancers all over the Bay, all over the world, dancing outdoors in different areas and using their cinematic skills as well as their choreographic skills. So that's something that would have happened anyway, but it takes on a more visual relevance and a resonance that I think people are fascinated by because of the lack of being able to go to see a live dance concert.
And what about musical events? SF Gay Men's Chorus comes to mind. They have their traditional Christmas Eve concert in the Castro Theater, which obviously won't be happening this year. That was always one of my favorite traditions.
Oh, yeah. I did that for my first year here in 1992. I didn't fly home to Ohio for Christmas, and I had a hot date for the Gay Men's Chorus at the Castro Theater. It was so San Francisco, and it was also Armistead Maupin made a guest reading, so it was like super gay. So I have a very nostalgic feeling in my heart for that, but they're adapting amazingly. I think they're having guest stars like Kristen Chenoweth do chats and Billy Porter and others. So they're rolling out an ongoing series of events that you can all see on their website and you can donate or you can pay. So they're also, that's another thing a lot of smart arts organizations are doing, optional donations, because they know it's less of a program, but also ticketed events where, no, they're going to get paid. These people are worth it. So there's people are learning how to do the pay what you can system.
Let's talk just for a moment about Oasis, which I think is a club that has really done an amazing job of, you know, it was a nightclub and, you know, drag shows there. And they've been doing a lot of online Oasis TV, Meals on Heels, I think it's called.
Yes.
Tell us a little bit about how you think Oasis has adapted.
I think Darcy Drollinger, who is now the majority owner of Oasis, has been so innovative. Even before the pandemic, she was innovative. But now they have archived versions of all their stage comedy shows and musical shows. Golden Girls Live is coming up in December. And they're just audience favorites. But along with the rooftop dining, which is, you know, safe spaces with the tables and the curbside stuff, they're also doing the Meals on Heels, where you get home delivery of a drag show and food, which is, again, it's adapting. It's really quick and it's adapting. And Darcy has made sure to find any means possible to keep people entertained and also to keep nightlife performers and DJs employed. And that's what the Queer Nightlife Fund has done as well. They have raised hundreds of thousands of dollars to disperse to out-of-work nightlife folks in the Bay Area. You know, from stage managers to sound technicians to drag performers to musicians and bar staff. I mean, these people are just really out of work and they're having to adapt as well. That was one of the first things that I noticed. Juanita Moore, Race Bannon, and others contacted me and told me, hey, and the stud folks as well, this is happening. They were the first people to act and to do something about this situation. So that's really admirable. They've just really helped people pay their bills and pay their rent.
I hadn't heard about the Queer Nightlife Fund. So you can go to queernightlifefund.org or something like that and donate and find out more.
Yeah. And they also have chats, online sessions about how can we, you know, solve racist problems in door policies, what are issues of accessibility. So there's a lot of other sidebar issues that relate to the wholeness of just trying to rethink how can we improve nightlife now that we don't have it. Let's look at it. A lot of interesting perspectives. Yes.
Great. One last question before we get into specific events. With vaccines on the horizon and with a chance of being widely available by sometime next summer or spring, if we're really lucky, what COVID-related changes in entertainment do you think will stay with us for a long time, even if vaccines prove effective? You know, for example, size or density of indoor events, films and concerts and so on, and bars and museums for that matter.
Yeah, it's unfortunate. Just now we all got announcements about most of the major museums closing again due to the revised closures and lockdowns or stage purple or whatever they're calling it. So that's unfortunate because they had a brief moment where you could walk through the Asian Art Museum with your masks and have limited capacity. So you had time to really enjoy the visual arts. They're all doing online exhibits, which is different, let's face it. But that adaptation, I think, is going to have an effect specifically for people and arts patrons who are already a bit skeeved out by getting too close to strangers. I think there's still going to be an effect of that even after that happens. People are still going to be cautious. So I think movie theaters are going to have to adapt and try to, now that people are conditioned to streaming all these kinds of entertainment, they're going to have to provide something else to lure people back into the theaters, similar to what Alamo Drafthouse does with food and drinks and, you know, no cell phone policies. They'll add strict don't sit next to a stranger policy, whatever they're going to do. But they're going to have to provide something else to assure people's safety as well as bring them back into public events. One of the big hits I think we've had is the drive-in movies at Fort Mason out in the East Bay. They're sold out weeks in advance, whether it's opera, an old Disney movie, or a baseball game in the stadium. Big outdoor events where people have space to be away from each other, I think, are still going to have an effect and going to be proved to be popular.
Great. Okay, thank you. So now let's talk about some specific events. What are some highlights that you see for this December?
Well, one of the things that, along with the drive-in movies, is the Taylor Mack show. Can we talk about that?
Absolutely.
Holiday sauce, Taylor Mack, I enjoyed the 8-hour practice session of his Americana show at the Kern Theater years ago. And it was astoundingly amazing. Just the most enjoyable, ridiculously fun thing. And then I went back I lasted about halfway through the 24-hour show. I went back for another section at a time. So the sheer enormity of his talent along with his affability makes you comfortable just sitting and watching him do stuff for hours. So now we have what is it, a radio version or a live? What is the format he's doing? I forget.
So this is basically, it's going to be a special live streamed event. It takes place on Saturday, December 12th at 7 p.m. Pacific time. And it's a co-production with Pomegranate, which I haven't heard of, but also it was commissioned by the International Ibsen Festival and the Norwegian Ministry of Culture and the National Theater of Oslo. So it's an online virtual event. It's visual for sure. Yeah. And then after that live performance, it's going to be streamed and available on demand from December 13th through January 2nd. Okay. I know there's going to be music in it. He released an album called Holiday Sauce. I shouldn't say he, because Taylor Mack's pronoun of preference is Judy with a lowercase J. So Judy released, and I did go to Holiday Sauce 2 years ago when it was here live, and we have a clip to play from that, which I'll play in a minute. It's, you know, it's a lot about, you know, Judy's point of view is that there's more to the holidays than rampant capitalism and gift giving, and he also acknowledges the family dysfunction, shall we say. So there's this song that I'm going to play that from a live performance previously called Christmas at Grandma's. And it's just, you know, he grew up in Stockton, California, so I don't know how much this relates to his own upbringing. Mm. But we'll hear a little bit of that.
And then Grandma got mad at Mama on Christmas. Did I break the tension? Christmas with Grandpa on my father's side. Christmas with Grandpa on my father's side. My mother takes me there to counterbalance all the masculinity that was lost when my father died. And so Grandpa, he buys me a shotgun even though I'm only 5 years old. And he gets really drunk and we go out and shoot things and scamper about. And the women, they stay inside and cook the meal. Except for my grandma on my father's side, who's not there because she died when my father was a child. And that's when Grandpa really hit the bottle, but he didn't want to drink alone, so he got his 13-year-old son to start drinking with him. And that's when Dad became an alcoholic. And then years later, he would crash into the oncoming traffic and leave my sister and my mom and I alone to have Christmas with Grandpa. This song is depressing. Christmas with step-grandma and step-grandpa. Here comes the hope. And when I am 16 years old, step-grandma and step-grandpa find out that I am a homosexual. And they're afraid I'm gonna give their real grandchildren AIDS. Even though I haven't had sex yet and I'm not a hemophiliac. But still, I am not invited to have Christmas with step-grandma and step-grandpa any longer. Hope!
So that gives you an idea of the kind of flavor.
Yeah.
This is a radical fairy reenactment of, mm-hmm. of your traditional holiday show. But he does sing some Christmas songs because, you know, he's nostalgic about it and yet skeptical about it at the same time.
Yeah, it gives it some perspective that's not totally naive like a Hallmark Christmas special. Yeah.
Right. So anyway, you can find info about that at sfcurran.com. And by the way, Curran is donating proceeds from ticket sales to Open House for those on-demand shows, which are $10. Not bad. And you can enjoy that at home. Anything else? What else is big on your list?
What I have been bookmarking a lot is some of the show concerts at Cal Performances. They've been recording classical music and modern contemporary music. The most recent one that you can view online is Yo-Yo Ma with pianist Catherine Stott. I mean, how can you not love Yo-Yo Ma? It's just like amazing, amazing stuff. San Francisco Performances also does and Noe Music and Old First Church do classical. If you want something alternative to corny Christmas music, there's nothing like some early music, you know, some cello and from the 14th century. I love that stuff. So that's going on. For more Broadway oriented stuff, I adore Seth Rudetsky and his partner James. They produce Stars in the House videos almost every day, sometimes twice a day, along with the Seth Concert Series, where Seth Rudetsky accompanies Broadway and TV stars It's addictive because it's basically you get to have someone like, you know, Patty Murren, Colin Donnell, or Anna Gasteyer in your home. And they're very informal, fun concerts. And they mess up a little bit and they talk backstage gossip and how you got that part. So Seth is encyclopedic in his knowledge of Broadway. Because the Broadway actors are just all – and performers and stage managers – they're out of work and they're eager to still perform and share stuff. So donations go to the Actors Fund, which helps artists in all aspects of the performing arts around the country, not just on Broadway. So I'm obsessed, as Seth says. That's one of his favorite catchphrases. So I love that stuff. SF Jazz, Fridays at 5. Every Friday, you get an absolutely pinnacle of jazz performance from different performers and a different lineup every week. So that's really cool. I love that stuff too.
And New Conservatory Theater Center presents A Mighty Queer Virtual Variety Show. It features 6 acts, including dance, spoken word, comedy, aerial stunts, and music. It's hosted by drag artist Dusty Porn, who sings operatically.
Yay!
Here's a bit of Dusty from an earlier gig. That's Dusty Porn, not lip syncing, that's the real deal, who promises at least one aria when Dusty hosts New Conservatory Theater Center's A Mighty Queer Virtual Variety Show. It's available online December 13th through January 2nd. Info at nctcsf.org. As I said, it includes an aerial performance by Joey the Tiger. I don't know how – it'd be interesting to see how they're going to pull off a gravity-defying aerial performance on video. I guess you get your big screens ready.
Right. They're probably using it at Circus Center, which also used to have an annual holiday show as well. We're being deprived of that. And I went to like 2 or 3 of those over in the past years. And it's just amazing, fun stuff. It's sometimes you just want some corny, sweet, family-oriented, you know, and I don't use that in a exclusionary term. I mean like G-rated – fun stuff where kids are welcome. That's what a lot of the holiday stuff focuses on. But there's a lot of unusual queer stuff as well, like the Slut Cracker. I don't know if you heard about that.
No.
The Slut Cracker is a bondage and burlesque themed retake on the Nutcracker. It's out of Massachusetts, and they've been doing it live for several years. It's basically a burlesque S&M bondage variation, which is the same Tchaikovsky score, but there's women spanking each other and whipping guys and doing pole dancing and burlesque. And it's a very bawdy, fun, visual feast if you're into that stuff.
All right. Be naughty for Santa this year. Some other time I'll sing my version of Santa Daddy instead of Santa Baby.
Santa Baby, yeah. What can I say?
Well, see, now this is great. So this is one advantage of this virtual world is that we can get stuff from across the country that we never would have even thought of before.
Exactly. I mean, I'm listing events that are taking place in New York and Michigan and Texas, and one is even in Germany because it's there. You know, there's a lot fewer limitations to online entertainment, obviously. You know, you can find all the movies you want. You can pay for them. You can screen them. You can Netflix and chill. But you can also look up your local or regional independent theater company or your local bookstore and join in on reading and have a book sent to you. You know, that's what I really want to stress is that independent artists are struggling. Bookstores, small theater companies are struggling. And they're eager and willing to accommodate and adapt and keep entertaining you so that you can continue to support them.
Where can people find information about some of the shows that you've mentioned? For example, Slut Cracker. If they go to ebar.com, are they going to be able to find this stuff? And is there a particular page to look at?
Yes, Homings Inn, my triple entendre revised arts, nightlife, and community listings are regularly posted every Friday or Thursday, depending on how I feel.
Homings Inn. Okay, very good. You're hearing Out in the Bay, Queer Radio from San Francisco. I'm Eric Jansen, speaking with Bay Area reporter, arts and nightlife editor Jim Provenzano about how we might best get through and maybe even enjoy this year's stay-at-home holiday season. If you want to find some of these events, go to ebar.com. That's ebar.com, and look for Homing's Inn. Did I get that right?
Yes. Homing is in. Get it?
Homing is in. Got it. Homing's Inn. Yeah, got it.
It's trending.
Yeah. Woohoo. Okay. So we've been talking about events, but as Jim is an 8-time novelist and an avid reader, we'll switch now to books, as reading could be especially enticing this winter. So before we talk about some of your favorites by other authors, tell us a little bit about your 8th novel, Finding Tulsa, which just came out in September. What's the story in a nutshell without giving away the ending, I guess?
The elevator pitch is gay 90s film director reconnects with the teenage crush of from a summer stock production of Gypsy, and then makes a big TV movie with gay themes by casting him in it, and then hilarity ensues. It's a more mature novel than I've written before, because it's about adults dealing with adult problems. There's a lot of LA 90s references and settings. He goes back to Ohio for a kind of retirement party of his teenage director from this small town. And then reconnecting, he goes through his past and how he became obsessed with, interested in theater, and how that affected his later directing career.
Okay. And most of a lot of your earlier novels have been about young love, teen love, for example. Your award-winning, yes, Lambda Literary Award-winning novel, Every Time I Think of You, was about two young men who become lovers and how the couple adapt to an accident that leaves one of them paralyzed from the waist down. So yeah, that was very touching and moving. So, I haven't read the ones in between, so I don't know. Most of those were also about younger folks. Yeah.
Pins, my first one about high school wrestlers was, the second and third were about cater waiters, monkey suits, and cyclists, and about a bike messenger were more 20 something, Rumana Clades. Every Time I Think of You and its sequel, Message of Love, were very, inspired by dreams and then very impulsive. I really obsessed for a few years about these characters. I went to Philadelphia to research places and where they could have lived and visited, and things they could have done at the universities and the parks. So it really filled up those few years. And then Finding Tulsa kind of got set on the back burner when all these other projects came up. The same with my last one, Now I'm Here. Those are the ones that kind of sat for years, because I realized the narrator is an adult and he's looking back on a past. So I needed to just really be more mature to see the past, because I started writing them while they were happening in the early 90s. A lot of the Finding Tulsa takes place in the mid 90s. So before cell phones, you know, people were faxing things to each other. There's a lot of retro stuff that you have to freeze in amber. You can't anachronistically throw things back and forth. So with gay porn stars and directors and the LA riots and all these things, I had to stay in that zone and go into it when I was writing the book. So it's been fascinating. I got some blurbs from filmmakers and authors alike who juggle those two worlds. And it was fun. It was great to get it out. I work with Palm Drive Publishing. They're up in Sebastopol. Jack Fisher and his partner Mark Henry work with it. And it was a good balance, because they're a small press that deals with high literature, but also erotica. And that's what this novel is about too. Hint, hint.
Yeah. Okay.
It's very sexy.
Yes. I read a little bit of it. The four chapter tease that you put out there for folks to read.
Yeah. You can, if you're, you know, curious about it, you can go to my website, jimprovenzano.com, and you can read the first four chapters for free.
How is it to do a book tour and publicize a new book during a pandemic and a shutdown?
I actually debuted Dog-Eared Books Castro's online reading events with wonderful help from Wonder Dave and Baruch Porras Hernandez, Alvin Orloff. I went to the bookstore, and Alvin's still on the other side of the room, because I wanted to, but also now they're doing a few a month. Doing this. So I helped them start off there. I feel really proud about that, because I wanted to support independent bookstores. But it's been fun. And at the same time, it's a challenge. I mean, here I am in my office, you know, just close the door, and you want to be entertaining and you want to keep people's attention and you want to share space with other authors. So I found that, like, working with Felice Picano to discuss gay Hollywood through the ages was more entertaining than just talking about our books or doing a reading. And that was fun, because we had like 30 people in a chat sponsored by the Bureau of General Services Queer Division in New York, which I always wanted to read at but never got a chance to. So I got to do that. So you have a chance to get an online audience that would not be able to be there in person.
Great. So besides Finding Tulsa, what recently published books by other LGBTQ authors do you recommend? What do you find on your reading list this year?
The big hit of the year, fall, I think, is Brian Washington's Memorial. This has been nominated for all these reviews, and he's been on talk shows. Once you hit the talk show circuit, like Stephen Colbert, you're a hit. It's really a funny story about a family, two young guys. Mike is a Japanese-American chef at a Mexican restaurant, and Benson is a Black daycare teacher. They've been together for years, but, you know, other things happen. A father dies in Osaka, and then the inner, how do I put it properly? The mix of the inner culture, the cultural between the two boyfriends, and is funny and sweet and heartbreaking. And it's really an amazing book. So Brian Washington's Memorial is just the hit of the year. Another great one that's came out recently is Sylvia Moreno Garcia's Mexican Gothic. It's been described as Lovecraft meets the Brontes in Latin America. So it's spooky. It alludes to magical realism of many South American writers, but also it's its own women's voice. It's its own voice, and I really just dove into that. For gift inspiration, I mean, if you want to give somebody else, there's a lot of photo books, and there's a lot of queer photo books that are out for your friends in Palm Springs. My friend Ron Williams has a new photo book of Palm Springs Pride. It's the most vibrant, colorful thing in years because he annually does. He has a few other Pride books, San Francisco Pride, that have historic merit, but also are just colorful, great coffee table books, because you'll probably see some of your friends. So if you have a friend in who visits or who lives in Palm Springs, this is a perfect gift for them because they're probably in the book.
There you go. Very good. Well, that's probably about what we've got time for. So that's great to have this wonderful roundup. You've been listening to Out in the Bay, queer radio from San Francisco. My guest has been Bay Area reporter, arts and nightlife editor, Jim Provenzano, author of 8 novels, including his latest, Finding Tulsa, published in September. Jim, thank you so much for joining us and giving us suggestions for how we might best get through and maybe even enjoy this year's stay-at-home holiday season.
Thank you, Eric, for having me. Happy holidays.
You can find a roundup of queer events in the Bay Area on the Bay Area Reporter's website, ebar.com. That's ebar.com. And we'll have links to a few of the events and books that Jim's mentioned on our website, outinthebay.org. While you're there, please sign up for our email newsletter so you'll always hear about our current episodes. And this month, please consider a year-end tax-deductible donation to Out in the Bay. It's especially important this month as we have a matching challenge grant from an anonymous donor who's put up $2,000. If we raise that much from other donors by January 1st, we'll get that $2,000, which for us means a lot because we're a small, independent production. We are not supported financially by the 2 radio stations that air us. Just hit the donate button on our website, outinthebay.org. That's outinthebay.org. Please and thank you. You can also get Out in the Bay via podcast. It's easy to subscribe via Stitcher and Apple Podcasts. Just click the buttons on our site, outinthebay.org. I want to thank my co-producers, Kendra Klang and Troop Wynn, and radio stations KSFP and KALW. Thanks also to Holly Mead, who wrote and performed our theme music. Instead of our theme music this week, we'll go out with Taylor Mack's jazzy rendition of a holiday classic. It's on his album and in his show, Holiday Sauce. I'm Eric Jansen. Thanks for listening and for joining us out in the Bay.